We're here today to provide guidance to the development of alternatives and Framework 4. As you probably realize, Framework 4 is meant to address some of the disapproved elements of Amendment 5, specifically dealer weighing provisions and measures to address net slippage. In your binders or on your CD, they're under tab 5. There's a discussion document. There's a presentation from Lori and a variety of other documents to support that. So I would like to turn it over to Lori to give a presentation on our initial meeting here for Framework 4. Oh, and by the way, just a note, we did have a hearing committee meeting that did come up with some recommendations for the council, but the AP did not, again, get a chance to weigh in on those because of a snowstorm, and we will have a AP meeting in February to get their input on these ideas.
Okay, thank you. I will be relatively brief. I'm going to run through a quick presentation that summarizes the information that is in the Framework 4 discussion document, which will be the primary document that we'll use for this discussion. Just to give you a little bit of background, this is the framework adjustment that we initiated at the November Council meeting to address the disapproved elements of Amendment 5 related to the dealer weighing provisions and the measures to address net slippage. The other disapproved elements in Amendment 5 related to observer coverage levels and industry-funded monitoring, as we discussed this morning, are to be addressed through the omnibus amendment. So Framework 4 just focuses on dealer weighing measures and additional measures to address net slippage. Related to the herring actions taken by the New England Council are the mackerel actions taken by the Mid-Atlantic Council, and I just wanted to update you on this. The Mid-Atlantic is running, developing a parallel framework right now to address some of the same elements. Amendment 14 to the mackerel FMP included a similar suite of measures that were disapproved, same as Amendment 5. The Mid-Atlantic Council is not revisiting the disapproved dealer weighing provisions at this time, but Framework 9 to the macro plan is under development to address the disapproved slippage provisions. All of the options that are being considered in the Mid-Atlantic Council's framework are provided in the Framework 4 discussion document. And just a last note on that, I believe that the final decisions for the Mid-Atlantic Council's framework are scheduled for the February meeting. So just to go into these issues one by one, the first being the dealer weighing provisions. What was disapproved in Amendment 5 is a requirement that dealers accurately weigh all fish and document how they estimate the composition of a mixed species catch every time they do a submission, every time they submit a dealer report. This measure was disapproved, and the reasons for disapproval provided by NIMS were that without more specific standards for weighing or more specific requirements for how the fish should be weighed or sorted or separated, this measure would not likely affect dealer behavior or improve the accuracy of reporting. A qualitative description of how composition of mixed catch is estimated that's provided at every trip is not something that the service can utilize as part of the catch monitoring program or quota monitoring, and there's no way to evaluate the sufficiency of the information that was submitted. So for these reasons, NIMS found this measure to violate National Standard 7, which is to avoid unnecessary costs and duplication, minimize costs and avoid unnecessary duplication, and the Paperwork Reduction Act, which requires that the utility of the measure proposed must outweigh the burden. Also, in Amendment 5, which the service did encourage that the council maybe revisit and reconsider, are some non-preferred measures. One of them was very similar to the measure that was disapproved, and it would require dealers to accurately weigh all fish and annually document how the composition of a mixed catch is estimated versus at every landing submission. Now, on the surface, that option has the similar problems as the disapproved measure, but there may be ways to revisit either one of those two options and make some refinements to it. The other measure in Amendment 5 that was non-preferred was Option 2C, which would have required dealers to obtain vessel representative confirmation of the transaction, safest transactions, weekly through Fish Online. In other words, when dealers submit the reports, the vessel representative would have to essentially look at what was being submitted and confirm it. As part of this measure, VTR and dealer reports would also be required to be submitted within 24 hours. So it shortens up the time allowed for reports to be submitted. So we did talk about this at the Herring Committee meeting and talked about some of the possible ways to revisit and refine these measures. And we also talked a little bit about some of the other alternatives that were considered in Amendment 5, including requirements for scales, hopper scales, flow scales. We sort of generally revisited many of the things that we talked about through the development of Amendment 5, and the committee recommends that we reconsider the three alternatives that were in Amendment 5, 2A, 2B, and 2C, with more, well, adding more specific standards to them for the weighing and handling of the fish. So the objective of these measures would be to improve the accuracy of catch information in the herring fishery. Some of the things that were discussed at the committee is that we should take these alternatives and get some input from the herring advisory panel, as well as participants in the industry, some dealers and processors in terms of how the fish are handled, what the most common kinds of containers that are used or fish totes that are used to store and estimate the weight of the fish, so that we can potentially implement some more specific standards as part of these measures. There was some discussion of requiring processors to use scales, since all the processing facilities already do that. and to potentially specify some weights for the most commonly used containers. As just an example, perhaps implementing, these requirements to weigh fish along with a standard that says that a fish tote is going to equal 100 pounds of herring or something like that. So those are the types of things that we're going to seek some input from the industry on and hopefully try to refine the dealer weighing measures with some more specific requirements. The second issue is the measures to address net slippage. The first thing I want to do is make sure that everybody is clear on what net slippage is. So I have pulled the definition of net slippage from Amendment 5. Slippage is defined as unobserved catch, and it is catch that is discarded prior to being observed, sorted, sampled, and or brought on board the fishing vessel. This includes the release of fish from a cod end or seine prior to the completion of pumping, or the release of an entire catch or bag while the catch is still in the water. Slippage does not include operational discards, and slippage does not include at-sea discards that occur after catch is brought on board and sorted. Amendment 5 also defines operational discards. Operational discards are fish that cannot be pumped and remain in the net at the completion of a pumping operation. The observers have helped the council through the development of Amendment 5 clarify what operational discards are. And the protocols that the observers use include documenting the fish that remain in the net, in a discard log, before the fish are released, And existing regulations require the vessel operators to assist the observer in this process. When the regulations for Amendment 5 are implemented, the Amendment 5 regulations will enhance the observer's ability to document operational discards. The measures in Amendment 5, among other things, include a requirement that vessels provide the observer with visual access to the cotton after pumping operations have finished. And that is in an attempt to allow the observers to better document operational discards. So, what was approved in Amendment 5? A whole bunch of stuff was approved in Amendment 5, and hopefully it will be coming online soon. Essentially, what was approved in Amendment 5 to address net slippage equals Option 3. If you go back to Amendment 5, while certain measures were disapproved, the measures that were approved, if you put them all together, are Option 3 to address net slippage. Amendment 5 will require for all trips when there is an observer on board that full sampling occur. That means all fish need to be made available to the observer for sampling. They need to at least be pumped across the deck. Amendment 5 will prohibit slippage unless it meets one of the three exceptions: safety, mechanical failure, or dogfish clogging the net or pump. So slippage will be prohibited, except for under exceptions 1, 2, or 3. If slippage occurs for either 1, 2, or 3, the vessel will be required to fill out a released catch affidavit. In addition, when Amendment 5 is implemented, there will be 100% observer coverage in all of the year-round closed areas, and operational discards will be prohibited in the year-round closed areas. If slippage occurs for one of those three reasons in the year-round closed areas, the vessel will be required to leave the area for the remainder of the trip. And then, as I mentioned, additional management measures to improve sampling, including visual access to the cot end, communication to the observer when pumping begins and ends, are also going to be implemented in Amendment 5. So we have a whole suite of measures here to address net slippage and enhance sampling in Amendment 5. What was not approved is the consequence measure that was added on to the measures to address net slippage. And the way it was proposed in Amendment 5 is that there would be a threshold of 10 observed slippage events by gear type and area allowed for one of those three reasons, after which trip termination would be required. So from the 11th event onward, any time slippage occurred, trip termination would be required, except for if it was for dogfish. So essentially, what we had proposed is if slippage occurs for reasons 1 or 2, after the 10th time, the vessel would have to terminate the trip. This measure was disapproved for a few reasons. Primarily, NIMS felt that the data that was provided in the Amendment 5 document did not support the proposed threshold of 10 events by gear type and area. The data that we have shows, in large part, that the number of slippage events by gear type and area is smaller than that, a lot smaller than that, and not consistently distributed through the areas and gear types. There was also a lot of concerns about imposing a sanction after a number of events have occurred. NIMS felt that it was an inconsistent sanction being applied, and that there were some fairness issues as well as some potential impacts in terms of safety and requiring vessel operators to make decisions that could compromise the safety of the vessel. So for these reasons, the measures were disapproved based on National Standard 2, Best Available Information, National Standard 10, Safety, and the Administrative Procedures Act. So at the hearing committee, we sort of revisited a lot of the issues and talked about what could be done to address and alleviate the main concerns that the service had about those measures. We took a look at some of the alternatives that the Mid-Atlantic Council is considering, and the Herring Committee did bring forward some alternatives. Keep in mind, as I mentioned, the measures that were approved in Amendment 5 are going to be implemented across the fishery. So back on the slide that shows you what was approved, once Amendment 5 becomes effective, all of those measures will be approved across, for all limited access herring vessels. So slippage will be prohibited across the fishery when there's an observer on board, except for instances 1, 2, and 3. So the question now is, when we come back and revisit these issues in the framework, do we want to revisit the consequence measures? And that's really where the framework for measures come in, or the framework for alternatives. So the Herring Committee approved a few alternatives for further consideration. The first one, and I've just named them alternatives 1, 2, and 3 for the slide, but don't get too attached to those names. The first one is based on Mid-Atlantic Council Alternative 6 in the Framework 4 discussion document. And this would require a vessel to vacate a statistical area when slippage occurs for reasons 1, 2, or 3. Trip termination would be required if slippage occurs for any other reason. And then as part of this alternative, instead of just the statistical area, we would consider some sort of miles away move along rule. And I'm interested to see what the Mid-Atlantic Council develops for this so that we can just steal their ideas. The second alternative is based on the Mid-Atlantic Council Alternative 7 in the Framework 4 discussion document. This would require vessels to vacate the statistical area when slippage occurs for reasons 1 or 2, but not for 3, which is dogfish. So for safety or mechanical failure, the vessel would have to leave the statistical area. Nothing would happen other than the measures that are going to be in place if slippage occurs due to dogfish, which means that the vessel would have to fill out a release catch affidavit. Under this alternative, slippage for other reasons would require trip termination. And again, sub-options are being considered for some sort of move X number of miles away. The last alternative the Herring Committee voted was to extend the closed area 1 provisions throughout the fishery. And these are actually, right now they're the closed area 1 provisions. When Amendment 5 is implemented, they will be the groundfish closed area provisions. They apply to all the groundfish closed areas. Under this alternative, the slippage consequences would only apply to midwater trawl vessels because the groundfish closed area provisions only apply to midwater trawl vessels. So this alternative is specific to midwater trawl vessels only. Slippage would be prohibited except for 1, 2, and 3. Operational discards are prohibited. That's something that is a unique element of this alternative and not the other two. And then if slippage does occur for 1, 2, or 3, we will consider options here that the vessels would be required to either leave a statistical area or the management area for the remainder of the trip. And I do, by the way, just to the committee members, my apologies for all of the confusion over the closed area 1 measures at the committee meeting. I was not at the committee meeting, and I was on the telephone, and I was a little foggy, and I think we were all a little unclear, and I was having a really hard time with that discussion. So hopefully we have them right now, and everybody's clear on what they are. I'm sure the regional office can correct us if not. But this alternative would essentially extend those provisions to midwater trawl vessels fishing in all areas. That's a summary of where we are now, and this is the general timeline for Framework 4. We did not have the AP meeting in January, so we will be having the AP meeting in February, and I'm hopeful that the AP can really focus on some of those dealer weighing issues and give us some good input into some of the details that we can implement for dealer weighing. This is the initial meeting. The council is scheduled to make final decisions at the April council meeting, so we will have time in February and March to get the committee and the advisors together to, the advisors to give us some input on the measures, and then once we get some analysis done and we have things a little more put together, we'll get the committee and the advisors together before the April council meeting. And then certainly the intent is to submit and implement as soon as possible. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Lori. Questions for Lori? Terry?
Okay, so this Framework 5 stuff, this Framework Amendment 5 stuff that supposed to be implemented soon has the 100% observer coverage paid for by the industry, but we have no way to do that according to the discussion we had this morning. Am I seeing that right, or is that wrong?
Well, that's the separate issue that we are hopefully addressing through the industry-funded omnibus amendment. The Amendment 5 measures that will be implemented soon include a requirement for 100% observer coverage in the groundfish closed areas, as well as all of the measures that require full sampling and prohibit slippage, except for under 1, 2, and 3. All of those measures are in Amendment 5. What was not approved in Amendment 5, we are dealing with through the industry-funded omnibus, which we talked about this morning, and through this framework adjustment, to the extent that we can.
Terry.
Yeah, sorry. So this framework gets submitted in April, if it gets approved. What do you see for a timeline before it's implemented, Lori?
Well, final measures will be selected at the end of April. The submission document will probably go to the service in June. You know, we usually do 4 to 6 weeks for a submission document. And I would really, beyond that, I really can't estimate at this point. Certainly by the start of the 15 fishing year, January 1, that's seems to be sufficient time. But when we say ASAP, I would hope that it would be earlier than that.
All set? You got another question? Okay, good. Go ahead, Terry.
Okay, so how does that interact with our, if this framework goes through, how are we supposed to get observers on those boats when we have no avenue to do it through this framework? Even if they approve it, we're still waiting for the omnibus. Is that right?
Well, the measures that are proposed in this framework and the measures that are going to be implemented in Amendment 5 will apply on every trip when there's an observer on board. So there will be an observer on board 30% of the trips, presumably. And we have a requirement right now for 100% in closed area 1. It's going to be 100% across all the groundfish closed areas. I'm a little unclear on how that's going to happen with the current funding issues, but to the extent that funds are available to put observers on the boats, these rules will apply.
John.
Thanks, Lori, for the presentation. So I have a question. First of all, I'm grateful that the council is proceeding on trying to figure out the slippage issue. I mean, we have the observer issue, the slippage issue, the dealer issue, and we're trying to figure out how do we knock each one of these things down. And so my question is both to you and to Kerry here in terms of one of the problems was not enough communication before that caused us to partially approve, disapprove. So my question is to get at making sure we have good enough communication in making sure we have a good range of alternatives going forward. And so as you present these alternatives where your language is, well, we got, for example, alternative 2, which is Mid-Atlantic, council alternative 7. So this may get confusing. If so, I apologize in advance. On the safety and trying to make sure we have enough alternatives going forward so we're not disapproving something because we don't have enough alternatives. The safety ones that we've got require leaving. Now, were there Mid-Atlantic alternatives 2 and 3, I think, that didn't require leaving an area or returning to port for safety reasons that aren't being included in this package that I think are called Mid-Atlantic Councils 2 and 3 as opposed to our alternatives 2 and 3? Because right now, if to declare a safety reason, you have to leave. That's a penalty for a safety reason. So it's a disincentive. And so I'm just wondering, I want to make sure we have the, and again, this may be a question for either Kerry or Lori. I don't care who answers it, but I want to make sure we've got the right number of alternatives going forward.
Get the answer, David?
Yeah, the key aspect of this particular or set of alternatives is the fact that we are pursuing the sub-option for miles away move-along. So instead of being obliged to leave an entire statistical area, there would be this miles along, move along, which still has to be worked out by the committee. What is miles along? How many miles? So the committee is very aware of that concern regarding safety, but at the same time, and that awareness has led to the miles away.
Lori?
I'm sorry. I guess I'm just a little unclear what the concern is regarding the range of alternatives.
Kerry.
So hopefully I can try to help explain what the concern was. So with the current range that's recommended by the committee, you will have a consequence for any slippage due to safety or mechanical failure. And so what we were thinking in our office is to expand the range of alternatives to include Mid-Atlantic Alternative 2 and 3, those only have consequences for non-exempted slippage. They do not have consequences if you slip for safety, for mechanical failure, or for dogfish. And the reason to include them would be to round out the range of alternatives and really be able to compare and contrast the safety issue. That came up repeatedly at the committee meeting. You know, what is safety? What does that mean? If these alternatives were included, we could round out the range of alternatives and compare and contrast if safety is indeed an issue. And it's unclear how the move-along rules or miles away were going to play out. But I think that could also be considered as well. And I think as far as fleshing out the safety, it's critical that the AP be involved in that to help the PDT.
David.
Well, Kerry, here on the safety issue as it relates to the miles away, that's how we would deal with further explorations of safety considerations. We did discuss safety concerns at the committee meeting, as we have in the past, and I believe that one of the points that was made was that this is a tough call. If a midwater trawler, if anyone says they have a safety concern, how does that get verified? If I was the captain of a boat and I had a problem, or at least I thought I had a problem with what's in the net, I would say it's a safety concern. I'd come up with something. So it's not something that you can. It's very subjective on the part of an observer who would have to say, all right, it's a safety consideration, fine, you're exempted, and then it gets jotted down on the form that was slipped because of safety consideration. So in order to get away from the possibility of there being a false claim that there is a safety consideration, or the possible false claim that there's a mechanical problem, the miles away, move along options seem to be the way to address that, especially to consider that as opposed to what was offered up in Amendment 5 initially, that is the 10 slips. The 10 slips was offered up initially because we thought it was a disincentive for fishermen to claim safety. If it's a safety reason, okay, it's safety. So you say it's safety, and it's one count against you, but we're not going to go there. The committee decided we couldn't go there because of the very legitimate concerns expressed by the regional office. So I believe that the committee is hanging its hat on the need for further work on and justification for the miles along as a way to deal with this this tough nut, which is whether a slip is occurring because of safety or not.
Mayor Beth.
So I appreciate the concerns expressed by the agency, and I've passed out a motion to substitute that I will make later that I think would cover the concerns about safety. And even though we did have that conversation at the committee, and I understand Dave's comments here today, I didn't agree with it then. I just don't think for a safety issue that to second guess whether a captain is, you know, is correct or not, and the consequence if they're correct and they don't do something because of an, you know, disincentive that they have to move or leave the statistical area, I don't think it, you know, meets national standards at all. I really have a lot of concern about that. As far as the exemptions that are in the current alternatives, the only one that stayed in was dogfish. In my opinion, that's the only one that you should make anybody move for. If you encounter dogfish and you cannot pump the fish because there's too many dogfish and it's going to clog the pump, you need to move. So we now have alternatives in there, and the only time you don't need to move is when you encounter dogfish. That's just not a very good way to go. So Doug has not made any motions on behalf of the committee, so I'm not going to make a motion to substitute for a motion that has been made. But anyway, I think that it could address some of the concerns the agency has highlighted.
Well, that might speed things along. Are there other questions for Lori? Sean?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Get the timeline back. That's really all I wanted to address. And I'll say it's really been a while since I've been directly involved in the council process. So I have to say the efficiency of this council has improved exponentially, because I've never seen the council in one day take action, final action on an amendment that had never come before them before. And now, what I'm trying to understand here, so I understand that the next meeting will be the implementation meeting, but I also understand that the details, like miles away, which essentially right now the framework document are a bunch of concepts, and certainly there isn't time on the schedule to figure out whether that's 10, 20 miles, what the alternatives are going to be. So I guess that's being delegated to the committee. What I don't see on here is any target date for publication of what the actual alternatives will be that the council will be voting on in April, or any indication that there will be a public hearing or any other comment period than the actual April council meeting itself. I understand that the rules of physics are different when they apply to the herring fishery, but in some sense, I mean, will there be a public hearing?
Where this is a framework process, just like every other framework process. We have an initial meeting. The council gives guidance on the formation of the range of alternatives. The PDT will meet, flesh out some of the alternatives. The advisors and committee will weigh in. We'll do the analysis. Committee will recommend final measures, and we'll go to the April council meeting, and the council will select final measures. It's the way we've done framework adjustments the whole time. For every
is it? Yeah, I mean, I guess, again, I said it's a long time. I don't know if I've ever seen anything as sort of insubstantial, though, as what's here. And I understand that there were measures that were analyzed in Amendment 5 or riffs on those. So in any event, this morning I had made the point that I thought it would be really important, particularly for these measures. You know, we don't know what a move along means. I'm not exactly sure how staff is going to analyze move out of a statistical area, given the we don't know where that type of thing. But I do know that all these measures are going to involve a lot of costs, increases in marginal costs, and they'll differ widely among the various alternatives that are before you. I seriously doubt that we're going to have sufficient cost or other information to actually figure out what those impacts are going to be. And I would point out that among the other things, annual catch limits and the like that the Reauthorization Act imposed, they also require, an assessment of the cumulative economic, social, and conservation impacts on fishing vessels and fishing communities. And I guess what I would do is urge, the council to take April to look at a revised document that the AP has had a chance to put their input in more detailed alternatives that the committee is going to develop, and then vote on the document for the May-June meeting. I'm not so sure those couple of months is going to make a big difference in the health of the ecosystem, but I do think it would make a better management process. And that's all I want to say. Thanks.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have three motions from the committee. One involving dealer weighing and a couple involving the measures to address net slippage. The first one involves dealer weighing. There's and Karen has them, and we'll put them up on the board while I read them. The first motion is to include in Framework 4 alternatives that would further develop Amendment 5 alternatives 2A, 2B, and 2C for accurate and verified catch weights. Additionally, to include development of industry weighing and handling standards to support these alternatives.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Council comments. Audience comments. Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I personally think it's premature to be identifying preferred options at this point in time. We haven't even gone to the AP yet. And if you look at some of the votes on some of these things that are going to be coming up, they were real close, 5-4. So I am frankly surprised that we're going to identify preferred options today. And as a member of the public, not a member of the committee, I'm opposed to it. Thank you.
Just for your clarification, Jeff, it's not a preferred alternative. Other, anyone else in the audience? Back to Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the committee, I supported this motion. Even though 2C, I have some significant concerns about that I've expressed at the committee and in the past. So I will continue to support the motion, and as we develop it, I'll probably continue to express concerns about 2C.
Other counsel? Terry.
So, I was at the committee listening in on that day, and I heard this conversation, and it didn't make sense to me that a BTR is not a binding number to NIMS. I mean, I send in BTRs all the time. They're consistently 10% low. They go by my dealer weight sheet. I hail exactly what I hail in my book. My weight's usually 8, 10% high. We don't ever get in trouble because of it. So that's what I couldn't understand the day after the committee meeting that they were wrestling over. So it didn't seem to, I don't know, I've never got written up for that. And they've always.
Mary Beth?
So just to provide a little bit more information, 2C, dealers required to obtain vessel representative confirmation of safest transactions weekly using Fish Online. And this is actually something that, in general, I believe the agency encourages people to do. You know, go online and check, you know, the dealer reports associated with your VTR. What's different about this is this would require it under a regulation. You would have to do it. And my concern was, and if you saw a discrepancy, you'd have to report the person, the dealer that had the discrepancy to the agency. And we, as vessels selling to dealers, this is a competitive market. You develop relationships with that dealer. And the whole concept of, you know, your customer, you've got to double check on their reporting. And if they didn't report correctly, you have to report them. So it's, I think, to me, a conflict that you shouldn't place people in that position. I think you should encourage them to do this. I just don't think you should create a regulatory scheme like that. But people wanted to include it, and as I said, I did support the motion. It's a range. I would hope we would not choose that because I just think that that's a very odd thing.
Are there any further comments on the motion? Seeing none, those council members support the motion on the board, please indicate so. It's unanimous, 15-0-0. Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next motion, I combined two committee motions because they were very similar. They were the Mid-Atlantic Alternatives 7 and 6. Hopefully this won't violate the Pierce rule. We tried to get it down to it. Are we good? All right. And this motion is to include the following alternatives in Framework 4 to address net slippage. An alternative based on Mid-Atlantic Council Alternative 7 in Framework 4 discussion document. And this is to require vessels with limited access herring permits to vacate the statistical area in which any slippage besides dogfish exemptions occur for the remainder of the trip. In addition, if a non-exempted slippage occurs, the vessels would have to terminate the trip. Mechanical and safety issues that lead to slippage events would thus require leaving the statistical area but not require trip termination. And the next one is an alternative based on the Mid-Atlantic Council's Alternative 6 and to include it in Framework 4, in the Framework 4 discussion document to require vessels with limited access herring permits to vacate statistical areas in which any slippage occurs for the remainder of the trip. In addition, if any non-exempted slippage occurs, they would have to terminate the trip. So mechanical, dogfish, and safety issues that lead to slippage would thus require leaving the statistical area but not require trip termination. And for both of these alternatives, there will be a sub-option for miles away move-along rules as a consequence for slippage.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Ellen.
I have a question that's really going to sound stupid, but does this limited access include all A, B, C, and D permits?
No, the Ds are open access, so it's just
A, B, and C.
Yes.
Mary Beth.
So I do have a motion to substitute, and if this motion were to pass, it would make moot the second motion that Doug has in this section. And if Karen could put it up, I did provide everybody with copies because I think it may violate the Pierce rule. We'll see how that goes. So it does, but I'll read it into the record. So to the motion to substitute to include the following alternative in Framework 4 to address net slippage, move-along rules, to consider requirements for vessels with limited access herring permits to be subject to move-along rules as a consequence in the event that slippage occurs in the fishery. Component 1, require move-along strategies A, vacate a statistical area, B, vacate a management area, C, move X number of miles. We really didn't define the number of miles at the committee. Component 2 would be exemptions that may be considered for move-along strategies. And it would be either you move along or you don't under these. And the options would be choose none, choose one, two, and it should say and or three. That was an error on my part, Karen. A, dogfish. B, safety. And C, mechanical failure. And one of the reasons this... Actually, I'll finish reading and then go back. Component 3, operational discards, midwater trawl only, and bottom trawl in parentheses, not addressed at the committee, and operational discards not allowed for midwater trawl gear. And component 3 is trip termination. If a non-exempt slippage occurs, the vessel would have to terminate the trip. And if I get a second, I'll provide some rationale of why I wrote this up.
Is there a second on the motion? Second by Terry.
So just to provide some rationale, as Lori indicated, there was some significant confusion around the table on some of these alternatives, and they certainly are not written in plain language. I sent them out to people that I work with, and they sent a note back and said, that's fine, I have no idea what they mean. So I spent a bit of time explaining what they mean and then decided that I would choose this approach so that it's very clear to the public what we are doing. And quite frankly, the two alternatives that Doug had up in his motion really basically say the same thing. The only difference is one is a statistical area and one is something else as far as the move along. So there seemed to be a lot of overlap. And what I have tried to do here is to include all of the elements of all of the alternatives that were discussed, the three different motions from the committee, even those portions of it I really don't care for, such as operational discards. And the only change is that I included the three exemptions partially that I've already spoken to. Is to me, dogfish should be the only time you need to make somebody move because you want them to move away from dogfish. And the agency's concern on safety I share. So that's my rationale, and I did send it to Lori because my intent here clearly is to include all of the elements of the three motions that the committee passed.
Council discussion. David.
I compliment Mary Beth for her way in which she's kind of simplified the box that we're trying to break into separate compartments. But I believe that the committee picked these particular alternatives in part, or maybe largely, to be consistent with what the Mid-Atlantic Council did at their last meeting dealing with mackerel. In other words, we changed the numbers of the alternatives. They're not both like alternative 7 or alternative 4, but I think we use basically the same language, just in the interest of being somewhat consistent with the Mid-Atlantic. So that's why we broke it down into separate alternatives with the language that we chose at the committee level. I think with this particular motion, there's so many different combinations that you could pick that I don't know how this would qualify as a first framework meeting. These are not specific alternatives. It's the whole suite, and you can pick and choose. But with the alternatives that the committee has provided to the council, they're set alternatives with different parts to them. So I can't support Mary Beth's motion, even though, again, she did a good job trying to capture all the different alternatives that are out there for us to consider.
Tom.
I actually appreciate this. I think it makes it a lot easier to digest for us and everybody else, and probably makes it a lot easier to structure the analysis in the document and the options. So following up on Dr. Pierce's question, I guess it would be through the chair, possibly to Chairman Robbins. If we were to take this approach, do you see that it would be difficult to align with the outcome, potential outcomes of, you know, what the MID's trying to get done? I think we may be able to get to the same spot and not undermine each other just because we're restructuring how we're approaching our organizing our alternatives.
Chairman Rick.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the question. I've been reviewing some of the draft alternatives in our document, and as I understand those relative to this menu approach that's been offered up, I don't think that the substitute motion would foreclose us from implementing any of the existing alternatives that we have. I think you could reconstruct any of those through some combination of these options that have been put forward in the substitute motion.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like the attempt at clarity, but we lose the relationships between the different situations and the requirement and any actions that are required when we remove the language surrounding, you know, the motion itself. I mean, this is a pick-and-choose menu of at least 27 different variations, if not more. If you look at, if you sort of do a grid box between A, B, and C for the first component and then second component, there's 27 different possible combinations, permutations here. I think that, I don't know, it seems like it's an awful lot of analytical work to go along. I don't think it's as clear and concise as Doug's earlier motion. So I'm not going to be supporting it. I think we're breaking things apart in a way that we lose the reason why we're putting them together in the first place.
BK.
Yeah, one question I have on the motion to substitute is this pertain to, I'd like to see it only pertain to A and B votes. I'm not sure if it's cleared out in this. C vessels, you know, they could have a problem, and I'd like to see the, if it could be a friendly, or if not, maybe I'll amend. But the bottom trawl, too, you have bottom trawl in there. And in component number 3, an operational discard for a bottom trawler, it says operational discards would not be allowed. That's, you know, so they would have to take all that on board. Is it, that's, if you could clear that.
Mary Beth?
Well, I just put that in there as a question because, to me, using bottom trawl, you probably don't have operational discards. I thought it was worth just asking that question. I mean, when we talked about it at the committee, I mean, it clearly you're not going to, you know, extend this to purse seining because there's no ability for a purse seiner to bring operational discards on board. Fish are not going to go through the block, and so there's really no point in having that conversation. But this section of the document on slippage in Amendment 5, you know, the new rules that Lori's described is for all limited access vessels. So, I mean, if you feel that for a bottom trawl they just don't have them and they shouldn't be in there, then I would just recommend that we just exclude that from the document. And so that's just a question why it's in there.
Ellen.
I'm on the same page as PK is. I guess I have a question for Lori. How does the slippage pertain to bottom trawl C vessels?
Lori?
And how many vessels that would pertain to if you had the C permits? I'm really confused.
Well, I mean, I think there's probably about 60 some odd category C vessels, maybe. A, B, and C add up to somewhere around 100. But A and B land 98% of the fish. We did agree in Amendment 5 that the catch monitoring measures would apply to all Category C vessels as well. That's the limited access fleet, about 100 vessels. So all of the measures that are going to be implemented in Amendment 5 will apply to all, Category C vessels when they are on a declared herring trip. So if there, when there's an observer on board a Category C vessel, if he's declared in the herring fishery, he's going to be required to allow the observer to have full access to all of the fish, and slippage would be prohibited. Slippage is not necessarily an issue for bottom trawl vessels. And those measures, while the catch monitoring measures have all been tailored to the entire limited access fishery, I think that the slippage provisions probably relate mostly to the midwater trawl vessels. However, you know, the bottom line is that the intent behind the Amendment 5 measures is that if there's an observer on a bottom trawl Category C herring boat, that observer has to have access to all of the fish that are in the net, however that may occur. Chances are that the operational discard component does not apply to bottom trawl vessels. And is just more specific to midwater trawl. But all of the measures that require full sampling will apply to the Category C bottom trawl vessels as soon as Amendment 5 is implemented. So if there is, and maybe, you know, this is something we can explore with the PDT a little more, and I can talk to the observer folks about, if there is some sort of event where a bottom trawl vessel, for whatever reason, would release the cod ends before the observer has the ability to visually inspect it and has the ability to document everything that was in the cod end, that would be considered a slippage event. And, I mean, that may happen on some of the larger bottom trawl. I don't know how much that happens, but we have some larger bottom trawl vessels. We have Category A and B bottom trawl vessels as well.
Doug?
Yeah, from my recollection from some of the public comment from Amendment 5 concerning bottom trawls is, one, there aren't obviously operational discards for bottom trawls. There aren't nets. There aren't fish that they can't pump on board because they don't pump. They bring them up on board. Now, you could have a slipped event because you might have a mechanical failure. And we had looked at this, at least in Amendment 5, that would apply, the slippage consequences would apply to them. Now, that was disapproved. Now we're saying that there might be some options here where if you had a mechanical failure, you might have to either move miles away or vacate the management area or vacate the statistical area as an option here.
Terry.
Yeah, sea vessels could have a trip limit slippage event. Yes, I understand that they do. That's what I mean. Once they push up against a trip limit, would that be considered a slippage event? Oh, I mean, no. So if they get a trip limit?
Not if they bring.
If I could, I don't think that that would be considered slippage because they're going to bring those fish aboard and then discard them. That's not slippage.
Okay. All
right. PK? Yes, I'd move to amend this substitute motion to add a component, number 4, onto the end that says these alternatives will be applied to the following vessels when on a declared herring trip. Number 1, all limited access permits, and number 2, A and B vessels only.
You second that, Tom? Okay. Go out to the audience for comments on the amended motion to substitute. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Kalin for Lunds Fisheries. I apologize earlier not recognizing that you weren't developing preferred alternatives today. I think that this particular component 3, I think, is important. And, in fact, I tried to, as a committee member, tried to move component three in as an option, but it was substituted in favor of Mid-Atlantic Council options six and seven. So, in fact, this motion, not the motions that it substitutes for, is the only one that preserves all the Mid-Atlantic Council options that we have in front of us we'll be discussing in 2 weeks. That's the trip termination option. So I am in support of this motion to substitute. I don't like the idea of eliminating bottom trawl C category vessels. We've been through this for years and included them. And I think that you know, what's fair for the goose is fair for the gander, frankly. And I guess we're the gander, but anyway, so I like this motion without the was that a friendly on component five, or is that that's an amendment to the substitute motion, correct?
Correct.
I'm opposed to the amendment to the substitute motion, and I'm speaking in favor of the substitute motion without the amendment as a member of the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Lori.
Just to clarify, Mary Beth's motion to substitute had two component number threes, so we actually changed component number three to operational discards, component number four to trip termination, and now the motion to amend is to add component number five.
Chris.
Hi, Chris Wiener, tuna fisherman with Choir and American Bluefin Tuna Association. I wanted to say first, with my Herring AP chair hat on, that because of that snowstorm that never actually came to the north of Boston, we never met, and probably should have said this early in the day, but we do plan on meeting on the 13th, and one of the things we will address is, I think, heavily is the safety issue, so I just wanted to let you know. We will definitely be doing that, and wish we could have met before this. As a tuna fisherman and Choir, ABTA, and all that, I fully support, I initially supported the substitute motion, and I further fully support Peter Kendall's amendment to the substitute option. So just wanted to say that, and I think a lot of people in this region wanted to see C's out of this from the get-go.
Other comments from the audience? First, Gene, you have your hand up?
Just a quick clarification question. This amendment, it seems that these are self-contradictory. Aren't all A, B, and C vessels limited access herring vessels? I mean, the first one says all vessels. Then the second one says A and B only. Isn't it clear just to say, oh, those are supposed to be two separate options? So it's limited access herring vessels, though. I mean, the way it's written.
Are there any other comments from the audience? Back to the council, Ellen.
My memory must be really warped, because I thought that when we were discussing this the last time Amendment 5 was passed, that C and D vessels were removed and were not included in this this part of the amendment. And so I fully support PK's addition to the substitution. Amendment to the substitution. We're talking about very small vessels, and with most of them have a 2,000-pound limit, 1,000 on certain days. We're not talking about actually herring boats. We're talking about whiting boats that catch some herring. And that's what the sea vessels, most of the sea vessels are.
David.
Yeah, in terms of the sea vessels and bycatch, they need to monitor what they're catching, who's responsible potentially for a lot of bycatch, river herring, shad, what have you. I always think of the sea vessels that fish down in Block Island Sound, Rhode Island Sound. They do get some rather significant bycatches of river herring and shad. So if we're concerned about slippage, perhaps that would be good enough reason to include the sea vessels, not just the A and B. I understand the situation in the Gulf of Maine where it's a bit different, but not that different, actually. Ipswich Bay, trawling in Ipswich Bay. So I still think that sea vessels should be included. So I'm not going to vote in favor of the motion to make the change.
Any further comments on the motion to amend the substitute? Seeing none. On the motion to amend, are those in support? Please indicate so. And those opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, the motion carries 9-5-1. So we're back to the David.
Yeah, clarification on the main motion. I think there's some maybe a typo, unless I'm mistaking. Under component number two exemptions, it says after move along not required, choose 0, 1, 2, and or 3. What does the 0, 1, 2, and 3 reference?
Mary Beth?
Well, that's a result of moving things around quite a bit. And so it should really, to be correct, be that should be A, B, C, and not the... I don't know where we got the D, E, F stuff. And really, I suppose I could have written it out, but I guess the choice is to choose none of them or choose any combination of them. I mean, and the previous alternatives, the only one that we included was the dogfish. As I said, to me, that's the one that you should tell people they should move. And we didn't address safety, which the agencies brought up, and I thought, well, if I'm going to pull one back, I'll just put the ones that we currently have in the FMP relative to this issue, and I put them all in. So.
Okay. Are there any final comments on the motion to substitute? Lori.
I just want to talk a minute about the structure of the alternatives and the analysis in the document because, you know, this is somewhat of a menu of potential combinations. And I think that the motion to amend just took us from 27 to 54 or something like that. But I don't think that's how we're going to structure the alternatives in the document. I mean, first of all, this is going to be sort of one big analysis. We're looking at what we know about slippage over the last few years for these boats and breaking it down by where, when, what gear type, and why. And I mean, that's going to be the same across all of the alternatives. And then I think what we need to do is evaluate the significant components of these alternatives and lay out a few of the most realistic combinations here. So I think, you know, that's kind of, I think, how we'll move forward in the document for starters. We're going to know in a couple of weeks what final measures the Mid-Atlantic Council selects. So we'll have an opportunity to incorporate that alternative as part of this as well. But, you know, we're not going to be looking, I mean, I think, you know, we're going to have to evaluate the cost of a move-along regardless of what the exemption is, you know, why the vessel moved along. We're going to have to evaluate the impact of getting out of a management area, regardless of the reasons. And, of course, we'll look at the reasons, and we'll certainly be taking a look at those independently as well. But I'm not anticipating that we're going to analyze 54 or whatever possible alternatives. Also, I do think that the operational discard component and the trip termination component are somewhat add-on to the larger structure of these alternatives. So I think we'll be looking at those a little bit independently in the document so that they could be added on to whatever move-along and combination of exemptions that are chosen. But essentially what we're looking at here is what vessels are they going to move and why are they going to move? And then beyond that, any additional provisions will be analyzed. So We'll do the best we can with that, but I think it's going to be one big analysis and laying out some of the most likely scenarios. And then certainly at the final meeting, if the council picks a scenario that we haven't considered at all, we'll go back and reevaluate that.
Any final comments? David?
Yeah, just that I should have missed the last hearing committee meeting because it really served no real purpose. We've developed alternatives for the council's consideration. This is a mix and match, so we've taken a step back.
Matt?
I agree with Dr. Pierce. I think this is, it's a soup of different options for possible accountability measures. I've got questions about the analysis, which Lori raised for me. I appreciate that. I'm glad it's not going to be as much of a lift as I had initially feared. There's the situations, the permutations, the myriad options that we will have to grapple with in the future, there's way too many of them, and dozens. And I think the original motion that Doug put forward allows us a clear way forward that has the blessing of the committee. So I'm going to continue my opposition to this.
Dave?
Yeah, I think that Laurie's math is a little suspect. I see 81 combinations here. And I, for that reason, I share Dr. Pierce's, I guess, horror, and I will not support it.
Mary Beth.
So I'll just say one last thing, and that is that I think one of the greatest values to this is that it's understandable to the public. It's very transparent. It's very clear. Even the committee struggled in being clear in the motions that were on the table. Some of the questions that were asked, and it wasn't clear to me at the end of the day that the entire committee knew what they were voting on at all times. This is very clear. If you're a member of the industry and you look at this, you know exactly what it means. You know exactly what the alternatives being considered are, and I think that's extremely important. And I also think that it addresses the concerns that the agency raised relative to safety. So,
Tom, you got last word.
Very briefly, I actually, while I understand the concerns, I don't think it needs to be analyzed in that way. I'm not a technical analyst, but I don't think you need to go one by one and analyze 81 alternatives to do this job and understand some of the impacts of these decisions. I actually think, for the reasons that Mary Beth outlined, it's easier. It brings the key decisions forward for the committee, for the public, for everybody. I actually think it goes a long way to sort of helping us understand these decisions in front of us. So I will be supporting it.
Okay. I think anyone's going to change their mind. So on the motion to substitute, those support motion of the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? And those abstaining? No abstentions. The motion carries 10-5. We're back to the main motion as substituted. Same call. Those support the main motion as substituted. Please indicate so. And those opposed? And those abstaining? Motion carries 11-4. Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a third motion that we put forward, which from my standpoint under Mary Beth's original motion may have been needed to still be brought forward. And so but with the amendment here, it may not need to be brought forward. And I'm going to ask for consultation with this from the chair or anybody, but we'll put up the motion and which said to include the following alternative in framework 4 to address net slippage, an alternative that would expand closed area 1 provisions and consequences as outlined in amendment 5 measures for groundfish closed areas, only midwater trawl vessels with a limited access permit, no operational discards allowed throughout the geographic range of the fishery. This alternative would include sub-options that would require vessels to leave the statistical area or management area following a slippage event. Because this was limited to midwater trawl vessels only, as opposed to limited access herring vessels, I felt this was substantially different. But now that we have a option for A and B vessels only in Mary Beth's the amended substitute motion, we may be very close to what the intent of this was. I believe, I'll let Lori correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there are midwater trawl vessels that have either a C or D vessel permit. It's my memory from Amendment 5, and so I'd take any input on this conundrum if you can.
Before we go to Lori, I would note that there are a number of purse-seine boats that are Category A permit. Lori.
That was the point I was going to make. I think that's really the only difference at this point. And, you know, it for the purposes of constructing alternatives in the document, we may have what we want in there right now. This particular alternative is specific to midwater trawl vessels. So the suite of alternatives that were embedded in the motion that we just passed were specific to permit categories, all gear types. So that means that purse-seine vessels and bottom trawl vessels of those permit categories would be subject to those rules. That's different from this alternative, which would just apply the rules to midwater trawl vessels. That's the only difference. All of the elements of this alternative are in that last motion, however. So, again, you know, I don't know if we necessarily need another alternative, but that's the difference.
Council members? Tom?
Yeah, I think it's largely covered. I think if there's any distinctions to be made, we can discuss that at the committee level. My sense is that there's a tremendous amount of overlap between what we just passed and this. You know, the big issue being the gear type, and if we need to address that, maybe we could just, you know, that put that on the committee's plate, and that's how I think we should handle it. We can have that discussion at our next committee meeting.
If that's the general sense of the council, we can table this motion until the committee has had a chance to do the review and review Lori's analysis.
Could we withdraw it, given the sense of the council?
Advice from Gene is that it can be withdrawn without objection. Is there an objection to withdrawing this motion? Tom?
Just quickly, I don't object, only that, you know, to keep the, you know, if the issue is something that people want to discuss at the committee level, then we can have that discussion. But I don't object to withdrawing that. I think that's right.
Everybody okay with withdrawing this? Okay. Any further business, Doug?
No, sir.
All right. Do folks want to take a quick break before Terry takes us through enforcement? Oh, no, okay. No.